The playing time for Rain Hamcast podcast number 72 is 27 minutes 7 seconds, with station breaks at 9 minutes 1 second and 17 minutes 10 seconds. 10 second echo link and all-star timer resets occur at 2:50, 5:50, 11:40, 14:30, 20:24, and 23:03.
This is Rain Hamcast number 72, posted July 23rd, 2022, and voiced by Will Rogers, K5WLR.
This is actually kind of a community builder. People feel closer to their neighbors in their community. They get to know them better than they ever did before they had these radios.
Alan Thompson, W6WN, Public Information Officer for the El Dorado County Amateur Radio Club in Northern California. According to Alan, his Neighborhood Radio Watch program has about 400 members in El Dorado County, spread across 5 distinct neighborhoods, each with its own GMRS repeater. Alan reports that his group also helped kickstart 2 other programs in nearby Amador County. Here's the second excerpt of 2 from Alan's talk, Radio for the Rest of Us, that he gave to the QSO Today Virtual Ham Expo in August 2021.
The next level up here in this layer cake is you drop in a few ham radio operators. Oddly enough, our ham radio license does not cover GMRS, so you will need to get a GMRS license, like I mentioned earlier. We like to refer to these neighbors as our mother hens, because the mother hens can also talk to the GMRS repeater, and they can also do the heavy lifting in case there's any traffic that needs to go out of the area, in case folks cannot reach 911 or police or fire or first responders. The ham radio operators can do that. And then there's one other piece here that is a special alert tone that's supported by the radios that we've chosen. This is Motorola's Quick Call 2 pager technology that we use, and neighbors can leave their radios in a pre-programmed alert channel and avoid the chatter that might be on the repeater channel. So here's the radio sitting in the charger on the nightstand. It's quiet unless somebody sends the alert tone out, which will wake the radio up. And if there's something happening in the area, that's when we do this. So now you'll get a chance to hear that tone. And believe me, it is loud when it goes off. So that tells the radio's owner that it's time to wake up, start the coffee, and then put that radio over on the repeater channel if they want to monitor what's going on in the area. Well, I mentioned that we do actually have weekly nets. I call them safety nets. In each of these 5 areas, there is a distinct safety net that takes place on a certain day of the week at a certain time and on a certain frequency. We do this so that they can learn what to do before an event strikes. We don't want people just sitting with a radio in their house and then just waiting for somebody to call them. We want them to be active, so we encourage them to get on the net every week, and for more than a couple of reasons. These nets help neighbors ensure that their radios are working, that their batteries are not dead, and that the repeater itself is working. It helps to kind of stress that repeater and make sure that it's going to stand up under a load before we really put a serious load on it. Also, it teaches folks how to use their radios before there's an emergency, so they're not trying to fiddle with buttons and push things and not understand what to do there. Every week, we share information of community interest, things like upcoming events in the area, radio information, workshops. We do several workshops, fire safe tips, and then who knows, recipes, gardening secrets, items for sale, you name it. The same kind of gab that we do on our ham radio nets, just at the community level. And believe me, people love this. They think this is great because they don't really have an equivalent alternative, do they? Even if they get on Facebook or Nextdoor.com, it's not that immediacy. It's not that back and forth of hearing people talk. And you can't really, well, most people don't know how to do it, is set up a party line call with cell phones. So they can't have everybody all interlinked. Radio is the only way that we can do that. And what we found out is that this is actually kind of a community builder, that people feel closer to their neighbors in their community. They get to know them better than they ever did before they had these radios. We also conduct, as I mentioned, regular ongoing workshops, both online and in person. We'll do hybrids where we'll have some people come in, but other people will tune in online to do training. And we'll train folks on basic use and care of the radios and the batteries, how to behave on a safety net, what the role of the net controller is to be on that, how to use a scanner, understanding fire behavior, how fires move, understanding the incident command structure, which is starting to get a little bit sophisticated about how communications are handled, fire resilience, and lots of other topics. In fact, you're in a workshop right now, as a matter of fact, so this is not too far away from some of the introductory stuff that we do with our communities to explain the radio program. Okay, so back to our slide, what's in it for us? As a ham radio club, why should we do this non-ham radio stuff? Why should your club do this non-ham radio stuff? We don't make any money from it. It's certainly a lot of extra work, and it takes leadership and many dedicated club members to support a successful program, to really get it up and running and sustain that program. And some would say community radio is not real ham radio, whatever real means. I'm not so sure anymore what that definition means. But here's a few reasons why we think this is a good idea. And we think community radio just might help ensure the future of our clubs and our entire hobby. Since we started the radio program in late 2019, our free organic publicity is way up. We're now averaging 3 to 4 articles per year in our local rag, the Mountain Democrat. And this just came up this week, and we're really excited about it. We are going to be meeting with a photographer from Time Magazine who is flying out in a couple of weeks to do a photo documentary about our club and the Neighborhood Radio Watch program. We're really jazzed about that. We can hardly believe that that's happening. Our visibility in the community has never been higher. We're now being invited to host booths for free at many community events and fundraisers where we never have been before, like National Night Out, Homeowners Association meetings, fire safe workshops, and first responder meet and greets. We're being lumped into the same group with them. More events means more people see, hear, and join our Neighborhood Radio Watch programs. The more people we can get on the radio each week, the more secure and stable these community safety programs become. And the more everyone benefits as everyone shares the load. We end up having more net controls. We have more resources if there is an event to monitor social media, Twitter, Facebook, CHP, sheriff's office, scanners, et cetera, et cetera. Everybody is assigned a job during an event, just like we do with a ham radio emergency net. And there really is safety in numbers. We've now distributed well over 200 radios, and I believe we're closing in on about 300, and more radios are going out every day in this program. And we're now getting shout-outs from our local city and county officials and recognition by police, sheriff, and fire. One of the county sheriff's deputies is also the head of our Office of Emergency Services, and he sits on our Neighborhood Radio Watch Advisory Board. And this is key. This is critical to our growth and our credibility in the community. And anybody who's going to start one of these programs, think about that. You need to get an advisory board, and you need to get some of these key people on there to lend credibility to the program.
You're in the middle of our second excerpt from a forum talk by Alan Thompson, W6WN, Public Information Officer for the El Dorado County Amateur Radio Club in Northern California. After you identify your station, we'll continue this excerpt from Alan's August 2021 audio-video presentation, Radio for the Rest of Us, given to the 3rd QSO Today Virtual Ham Expo. This is RAIN, the Radio Amateur Information Network. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the RAIN Hamcast on the RAINReport.com and on the RAIN Report page on YouTube.
Our weekly on-air nets for our club And our club attendance itself, both online and in person, has doubled. We've had a lot of lapsed hams that have come out of the woodwork and said, hey, this radio program that you're doing in the community is really great. I want to be involved in it. I want to get involved in your club. Our membership is up. Our dues are up. And this is a direct result of these neighborhood radio watch programs. It is just amazing how this has generated more hams for us. And donations of money and equipment are way up, way up. So it has all those benefits to it, which we didn't really foresee. I hear a lot of hams say, you know, if we can just get the kids involved in ham radio, we can help ensure the future of our hobby. Well, I'm not so sure that we can do that very easily. I think it's better to first go after the parents and get them involved. Because if you get the parents involved, the kids are going to be there with them. And community radio programs are one way to do that. The parents get it. They understand community safety. They understand the risk of living in a high fire environment like we have here. And they're looking for alternatives. People firsthand have experienced these cell phones going down, and they know what that feels like when they're cut off. One of the worst things that could happen is we have the cell phone shut off and a fire breaks out, and people cannot get any emergency alert notifications about the fire. And if you're convinced that getting kids hooked on radio is a good way to grow our hobby and ensure its future, then it might help if you think of community radio programs as being a potential gateway drug, if you will, to ham radio in a good way. That's been our experience with many new hams, first discovering community radio and then going on to get a ham radio license. What could be better than that? Thanks, everyone, for spending your time with me today. I'll be around for questions, and I'll be available for follow-up by email if you or your club are interested in learning more about how to start your own community radio program. And special thanks to Eric Guth, 4Z1UG, and for making this presentation possible, and to the wonderful staff and the sponsors who have helped put on this amazing virtual ham expo. I know I've gotten a lot out of it, and I hope you have too. There is a website. I'm going to post a couple up here. If you do Facebook, if you do a search on Neighborhood Radio Watch, you're going to pull up our Facebook group. We got about 250 people that are signed up for that. We also have resources that are on our club's website for the Neighborhood Radio Watch program. That's edcarc.net, edcarc.net. Along the navigation on the top, you're going to see Neighborhood Radio Watch. And we have quite a few resources that are up there that cover the radios, some of the training issues, and how to get a GMRS license, things like that. So you'll be able to find quite a bit there. And then you can always follow up with me for more information about the program itself. Also, I've had some people already ask about whether I can do presentations for other clubs on the program. That's perfectly fine. I'll be happy to talk to you about getting those set up. When we first started the program was back in around April of 2019, shortly after I had come back from working up in Paradise on the campfire disaster recovery efforts there to help get T-Mobile's cell phone service back up and running. That pretty much turned me into an accidental advocate for fire safety and communication safety. And that's where the concept of this radio program came from. Since then, I probably have done, I'm going to guess, maybe 100 presentations online over the last 2.5 years or so now. I'm happy to spread the word and see these programs grow elsewhere. Are there other clubs across the country that have done Neighborhood Radio Watch? Yes. Actually, if you search for RRI, that's Radio Relay International, they've got some information there. There is a club that is on the East Coast. There's other ones that spring up that don't get a lot of publicity. I talked to a couple of people yesterday during the other presentation. They've started some community radio programs in their area. There is one in the California, San Francisco Bay Area that operates regular nets every week. And they're concerned about fires too. They've had some terrible fires near Berkeley and Oakland and in the foothills there. But they're also concerned about earthquakes. And they're concerned about losing communication services in an urban environment. So it's a different environment, different situation than what we face here in kind of more of a rural environment where we are in El Dorado County. I should mention right now that where I am sitting at this moment is in the Reno, Nevada Veterans Administration office. The reason that I am here is that I had to come up and do some training with the folks here on a portable emergency satellite internet system that they're going to be taking up to Susanville, about 100 miles north of here, and setting up tomorrow morning. The reason that they are hauling that terminal up there is it's going up to one of the VA clinics is that they have lost internet and cell phone service in Plumas County and in Susanville specifically. There's the Dixie Fire, which you may have heard about, which is the largest fire now in California history, cut the fiber optic cable that was going up along the highway on 44 and cut off, severed the internet and severed the phone system, because these cell phone towers need to have internet in order to function. And in a lot of places, they don't have any kind of backup that is viable and sustainable. So that's what I'm doing here. This is a case in point of where we have a community that is now cut off without communications, without centralized communications like internet and phone service. Do the radios have GMRS type acceptance? You know, Bob Hess, who is the president of our club, he's also our radio maven and our architect here for the technical aspects of the program. These radios are out of public service. I don't know specifically that they are type certified for GMRS, but we are using them for GMRS. Because of the advantages that I mentioned in the presentation about the alert tone capability, the quick call to capability, and the fact that they don't have a lot of buttons on them, makes them ideal for what we're going to be using them for. Also, we're actually talking now about getting a business radio license and switching everybody from GMRS over to business radio. It has a number of advantages, because then people will not have to get an individual GMRS license. They'll just be enrolled under our business license umbrella. And also, these same radios can be reprogrammed for business radio frequencies. All of our equipment is going to be forward compatible for that. There's also some issues with some potential interference. We've had occasional interference from the Sacramento Valley getting up into our repeaters and vice versa. And so we want to make sure that we have kind of a protected system there and a clear channel for people to be able to communicate. How much do we charge for the radios? We charge at our cost. So we'll buy these radios. In some cases, we've gotten some of these TK-380 Kenwood Handy Talkies out of public service through eBay. They flow out in the secondary market. So they might be a model that's 2 or 3 years old that has seen service with police, fire, sheriff. And then they just end up out on eBay. You know, they probably dump them out the back door in a big box, and then somebody comes along, scoops them up. And then we get them, sort through them, make sure that they're working okay. The first thing we do is put in new batteries, because that's the number one thing that you're going to want to do on these. Don't even think about the battery that's in there being viable. Just go ahead and order a couple of new batteries for them. And then out the door, at cost, we charge $75, $85, $95, someplace right in there, just to cover the cost of acquiring those radios.
You're still in the middle of our second excerpt from a forum talk by Alan Thompson, W6WN, Public Information Officer for the El Dorado County Amateur Radio Club in Northern California. This is RAIN, the Radio Amateur Information Network. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. We'll be right back.
This is the RAIN Hamcast Podcast, available on therainreport.com and on YouTube.
How many radios are out there, and how many folks check in on the weekly nets? Great question. We've got about 300 radios that have been distributed, and we've got more coming in and going out every week. We encourage everybody to get on these nets, but not everybody does. Some people will just listen to the net. And of course, we have no way of really knowing that. So we encourage people to get on there. I would say that out of that mix, we're getting about 50% of the people that actually check in on a weekly basis. And you might think of it like with a ham radio net. You may have 100 people, 200 people that are in a club, but how many actually check in during that weekly net? I guess it's a recruitment effort or a kind of a promotional effort on our part every week to call up and check on people. We've actually had some folks that we had somebody just follow up with them by cell phone or by email, or even just walk next door if it's a neighbor and just check and see, is everything okay? I've been out of town for a while, or the radio's not working, or whatever it might be. So there is some support efforts that go on after they get these radios. And by the way, we make sure that people have to get their GMRS license before we will hand them a radio. They need to at least make that commitment, make that much of an effort to get the radio. Otherwise, we won't sell them a radio. They've got to give us the license number. Not seeing anything about scanners on that site. Okay, scanners. If you look at the unit and scanners, They're the only ones that we're recommending right now that do the fire tone out feature. The one that I've got, and a real popular one because of the price point, is the BCT15X. If you shop around, you can find some deals. I think we just bought 10 of them for $150 each. And again, those go out at cost. We do this as a public service. People say, well, what's in it for you guys? Why are you doing this? It's community radio. It's emergency radio services. It's a voluntary effort on our part here to help keep our community safer. Does it do real-time neighborhood watch reporting, or is it only response to the fire tones? The fire tone out feature and the alert feature that's in the radio, these are two different things that are going on. The fire tone out feature allows people to have a scanner program for the different resources that are in their area, like police and fire, and the different fire departments issue these fire tone out commands. So somebody could have the radio on in the middle of the night, but they wouldn't be listening to a lot of chatter on there unless there was an alert sent by that fire station, and then that would wake up their radio. It's a safety measure. Instead of them hearing every police call or every sheriff's office call, or we even have channels for like animal control and things like that that are programmed into these scanners. So rather than listening to all that, it kind of keeps that quiet until they really need it. Kings Point Amateur Radio Club in Sun City Center does something very similar. Our concern is hurricanes. And that's the thing about this. I want to emphasize this. You know, in our area, it's fires. We right now, we had a fire that just broke out last night that is in the South County of El Dorado County. We've got two radio programs down there. And these are kind of restricted geographically because of the foothill environment that we're in. We don't cover like the whole county with one repeater. We have two repeaters down in that area. And there was a lot of chatter on there last night when this fire started up. And there is right now going on. I can't monitor from here, but it's there. And there's a lot of stuff that is going back and forth across our groups IO sites. We also set up a groups.io site for each one of these neighborhood radio watch programs so that people can sign into that and they can exchange information through there. So of course they need to have a computer or cell phone, and they need to have internet service. But we also provide all of these other ancillary support mechanisms, if you will, to help support those radio programs. The radio programs actually got their start on the East Coast. And the reason why is because they saw these hurricanes coming in that knock all the cell phone towers down, and then there are no communications. It's not something we thought up. When I first got this idea, when I was up in Paradise, and we were rolling around in trucks, and we have no communications up there other than a handful of FRS radios, just the cheap blister pack radios. That's when I started to think about this idea of what if just regular people had radios in their hands on the day of this fire? Could that have saved even one life? Even one life. So that's where we started from. And then when I started doing research, I found that there's a lot of different groups online that are in the country that are doing the same kinds of programs. I had mentioned that our donations have gone way up, specifically people donating money to help support the neighborhood radio watch program. So it's been a real surprise to us. We didn't expect to see that. It's helped the program immensely to have that financial support in there. Do we charge membership dues for the Neighborhood Radio Watch program? No, we do not. This is just a safety program for the general folks out there, and we don't want to set the barriers too high for them. It's enough of a barrier that they need to get a GMRS license. In some cases, we've given people radios. We've donated the radios. In some cases, we paid for their license fee. It's on a case-by-case basis, and we'll make some exceptions. And in some cases, somebody will just have a couple of FRS radios, and they'll just say, no, I'm fine with this. This is all I want to do. Now that I know that the radios I purchased last year for our camping trip already work with this program, I'm not interested in going any further. You know, we try not to be radio cops with this. We try not to put a lot of rules and regulations in place because that is going to scare people off. They just won't put up with it. We've had a lot of people that came through and said, you know, this radio stuff is really interesting. Tell me more about what you guys do with ham radios. And then that opens a whole nother door for communications. But now they've had a chance to try it out, explore the system, get some idea of how it works. And then now they want to move on further. That was also a surprise. We didn't expect that when we started this program. It wasn't intended to do that. We started the program before we had the advisory boards. I think we recognized that we needed to have credibility in our area because we were getting some skepticism from some of the fire captains. And I think there's just a kind of a common thread that runs through first responders and emergency personnel that they're reluctant to give too much information to the community because they're worried that people are going to stampede. They're worried that if they say, okay, you know, we got a fire here, so we're going to roll some trucks out there. And, you know, so everybody just kind of be on guard, that's going to be enough to panic people into jumping into their cars and clogging up the roadways and making more problems for the first responders. There's a valid concern there, but I think it's pushed too far to the limit where they withhold information that is really important, that people just say, listen, just give me the information. If I know what's going on, I can make decisions to keep myself and my family safer. So we felt that the radio program helps bridge that gap, but we also recognize that the first responders and served agencies have this apprehension that we're just going to be a bunch of cowboys out there that are going to create problems for them by getting on the radio and gabbing away out there and spreading nonsense. Our efforts to mitigate that meant that we started an advisory board. We've got first responders on that advisory board. We've got people who have come out of, who have retired from public service that understand things like emergency evacuations. They understand police and fire and sheriff's operations. And they, as a group, just basically put the stamp of these guys are okay. They're doing things the way they should be doing. We even train people on ICS. So if you know ICS and what goes on with those protocols, just the fact that we even know what ICS means goes a long ways to telling them, this is how we're doing things, folks. We are not doing social media here. We don't have people getting on there and saying, you know, I think that the situation with the forest is all messed up and what are we going to do about it? And they start fighting. Those kinds of things. We don't allow that kind of stuff to go on. It's discouraged anyway.
And that concludes our second Rain Hamcast podcast, giving you the nuts and bolts about the Neighborhood Watch program as it is being administered in El Dorado County, California, under the sponsorship of the El Dorado County Amateur Radio Club. This talk, Radio for the Rest of Us, was given by Alan Thompson, W6WN, Public Information Officer for the El Dorado County Amateur Radio Club in Northern California, given to the third QSO Today Virtual Ham Expo. Be advised, the FCC has reduced the cost of a GMRS license to $35 for 10 years. You'll find the not-for-broadcast video edition of this podcast on the Rain Report channel on YouTube. Copyright 1985-2022, Rain, the Radio Amateur Information Network. All rights reserved. Rain programming is made available under a Creative Commons license. You are encouraged to download, share, post, and transmit the Rain Hamcast in its entirety via amateur radio. Thanks to Tom Shimizu, N9JDI, for posting a not-for-broadcast version of these podcasts via the Rain Report channel on YouTube. Rain Hamcast podcast number 73 will post August 6, 2022. Wishing you very 73 from the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. Keep on hamming.